right. Welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson, and here sitting at my side is the beloved Zilpha. Hi, Zilpha.
Hey, John. Hello, everybody.
Hello. It's been a while for you.
It's been a while.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And joining us today is the man and the myth and the legend, Tyson, all the way from Los Angeles. Welcome to Studio Fist in Your Face.
Nice. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Is it everything you dreamed it would be?
And more.
Yeah, it's kind of a mess all the time. I will admit that.
Every mind is like that.
Every good mind is like that.
Every good mind is a mess.
So we're recording this, let's see, a couple days after Conference Untold.
Well, hold on. We have a studio audience.
Oh, we have a studio audience. Welcome to the beautiful studio audience.
I didn't think my personality was that large. So.
this room is, a lot of people say they think it's in my basement. We don't have a basement. This room is what, about 14 by 14? So it's not huge in here. It's a little cozy.
Yeah, but it's not like a quote studio. People come and they're like, oh, I was expecting, you know, like a studio with insulated walls and stuff.
No, it does get warm in here. And in the times when it's just Zilpha and I do admit that I have oftentimes removed all of my clothing during the middle of the podcast.
And probably times when it's not just you and I, too.
what are you suggesting?
I'm just kidding. That was only for one.
Oh, yes. That was only
one
for one.
Rumors are true.
Some of the rumors are true. Yeah, for sure. Most of the ones that aren't true, the ones that I've started. So, conference was this last week, and the subject of tolerance came up in Elder Packer's talk, and then it was mentioned again more than once, and it sort of set the... sort of set the Damu on fire, and people kind of got bent out of shape. So I thought we would take an hour or so and talk about tolerance. So Packer, to kind of set the stage, let me open my notes here. Packer said basically tolerance is a virtue, but like all virtues, when exaggerated, it turns into a vice, was what Packer said. And then he spoke of the tolerance trap. The tolerance itself can be a trap. Now, Packer, I love Packer.
Love. That's a big word.
Because he's the last of the theologians. He's the last of the members of the 12 who will say anything of interest. Most everything that's said in conference is just, it's like fortune cookie Mormon put into a blender, tautological bullshit. And it's hard to even, you could literally cut up all the talks into sentences and then shake them up and put them out on the table and construct another talk, and 60% of the people wouldn't notice because they're just repeating these good statements, right? But Packer actually says something, which is one of the reasons he pisses people off. But Packer, the point I'm trying to get to in a roundabout way, he's fixated on sex, and he has been his whole life. He's got none. I think an unhealthy obsession with sex. My theory, to put it out there in sort of a, I believe he's asexual, personally. And I'm going to defend that at some point. I've read a lot of his stuff. I read a lot of what he said. And my personal belief is that the man does not understand human sexuality at all. Case in point, he talks about when you have dirty thoughts, just stop having dirty thoughts. That's not the way the human mind works at all. And I just don't think Packer gets it. And
so he could be one of the 5% of the population who's asexual.
Yeah, it's not that uncommon for people to be asexual,
right.
And I'm sure we need to get a panel of asexuals on there sometime.
I would
love to see how they view the rest of us, because we must seem like a bunch of chimps to them, right? Everybody else,
bonobos, not chimps.
So that's the way we all look to Elder Packer. So when I listened to the talk on tolerance, he was like he always is, really talking about sex. But people took his statement and ran with it. And that's what I want to dig into. First of all, I want to say that I agree with him.
Well, that tolerance can be a vice.
Tolerance can indeed be a vice, and it is indeed a trap. So I'm going to put it right there. I'm standing with Elder Packer.
Do we take a vote?
On what? Whether I believe?
I don't know. What everybody else thinks.
If tolerance can be a trap
or a vice.
Well, let's
I would agree with John.
let's dig into that a little bit by what I mean. Tolerance, it has a built-in paradox to it, which is it has to have a limit. Otherwise, you're tolerating the opposite. So it spins around on itself and it becomes intolerance. I was reminded when I read about the talk by Elder Packer of an old Onion article, it was a satirical, news story that talked about how the ACLU was defending the neo-Nazis for burning down the ACLU clinic. Like that the ACLU was so tolerant that they were defending their people who attacked them in and of themselves. Because you push that tolerance out to a limit, and then you're saying, all right, well, I am going to allow for things that in and of themselves are not tolerant. It's a paradox that's built into democracy, too. The Nazis came into power. Have I already invoked Goodwin's Law on the podcast?
No, you're good.
The Nazis came into power in 1934 on an election. And then they immediately abolished elections after that point. So it is a property of democracy that people who are not democratic in their fundamental philosophy can be elected in the elections. We don't have a rule that says if you don't believe in democracy, you can't get on the ballot. We don't have any such thing built into democracy. So tolerance itself has limitations. And drawing that line of saying, I am tolerant, but here is where my tolerance ends, is an extremely tricky philosophical problem that most people don't even want to touch with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah. I have a good quote for this very thing. Unlimited tolerance. This is from Karl R. Popper, who was a philosopher. Still alive? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But he was in our lifetime. He could be dead. Unlimited tolerance must lead to the disappearance of tolerance. If we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, if we're not prepared to defend a tolerant society, then the tolerant will be destroyed and tolerance with them. We should therefore claim in the name of tolerance the right not to tolerate the intolerant.
All right.
That's philosophy for
you. I like a lot of what Popper says, but I think he's being lazy. I think when he just reverses the term and say tolerate everything but intolerance, it's a rhetorical trick.
It's not really a rhetorical trick.
It doesn't mean anything. It's not actionable. Because you can reverse
I think it's
it on
actionable.
Him. Well, if you're tolerating everything but intolerance, he's in fact giving a proposition that's intolerant.
Well, that's true. But then how do you get out of that trap?
Well, that's what we're here to discuss today. So let's go back to Elder Packer. Elder Packer in his talk was talking about the family and in his build up to his declaration on tolerance. And this is very important because it really frames out the Mormon way of thinking and where Mormon theology is today. And he was suggesting that in the law, we need to push back against basically a redefinition of the family. And that the family is sacred and the family is fundamental to Mormon theology, basically. And I think his words were the family is under attack. You always have to have that. Mm. And that the new philosophical attitudes or the policy that's being pushed weakens and destroys the family.
He says the permissiveness afforded by the weakening of the laws of the land to tolerate legalized acts of immorality does not reduce the serious spiritual consequences that result from the violation of God's law of chastity.
Right. So here's where the rubber hits the road when it comes to Mormon theology. Because we talk about tolerance, and there's tons of rhetoric going back to the very beginning on tolerance. And one could argue that, especially Smith himself, was a pretty tolerant guy. So some might ask the question, why did Mormons get so involved in Prop 8, right? Because the attitude, especially around the turn of the century, was, was live and let live. We're doing our own thing. We have our own culture. Why put your laws on us? We're okay with it. You're back east and it doesn't matter what we do.
Yeah, isolationist.
Yeah. We're not going to affect your vision of marriage. And why such a reversal? And the reversal comes from this principle of tolerance. Because because every argument that they use for the sanctity of the family can very well be thrown back at them very, very easily, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you say family and the stability of family is the center to our culture, and then you define that, the tolerance around that, you say, we want a stable home with parents that take care of their children, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then you bring up Steve and Ed, who are, you know, great guys who want to adopt a child. You've got this problem. So they have to push this tolerance line way out rhetorically away from them, because they're talking about two things. They're talking about the value and stability of family, but then they're saying we don't want family here, because they understand that argument will be thrown back against them. Right.
How would it be thrown back against them?
Because if you're saying that children need a stable family, that's what we need for a stable America, well, then that argument can be an argument for marriage, right?
Well,
because
yeah.
You say you're having all these households out there, and say if they get married, they're more stable, they raise better children.
Right. So why do Mormons have a problem with gay marriage?
You mean the theologically?
Yeah.
Because when Mormonism lost all of its theological underpinnings from the 19th century, so there was all this theological innovation, and since the death of Young in 1877, we've been basically on a 150-year retreat from all of those things. So what they did after, to make a long story short, statehood came, we got rid of polygamy, and then it was, oh shit, now what? So what we did then is, luckily, these wars came along, first World War One and World War Two, and then we just started waving that flag as fucking hard as we could. So we fetishized America. So mom, apple pie, family, the whole, everything you read in Reader's Digest in 1954 became the theology of the church. Leave it to Beaver, absolutely. And then we had the Cold War, and we were just on our stride. Everything was in sync. But then the counterculture came. And then the Mormons have been slowly being pushed out into the cold because they're married to this old-time thing.
Well, and they thought that they could keep all of those ideas at bay by prohibiting beards at BYU.
Yeah, yeah. But the beards and the earrings and turning these into petty rules. But what's left is the fetishization of this nuclear family. This
Right, which is bizarre, knowing the history of Mormonism was so wrapped up in something that was totally non-traditional family, that they have come so far that they aren't accepting of an idea that's not traditional, even though that's where their roots are.
Yeah, but it's only bizarre if you know Mormon history, which you wouldn't get from any publication coming out of the church.
That's true.
Right. Like, if you read the manuals, like, that have been out for the last 10 or 15 years with that Brigham Young and John Taylor, these are the words of the modern PR department. These are the words of Gordon Hinckley.
And they're carefully
cast 150 years ago. Yeah.
Edited. Polygamy is edited out of them.
Well, polygamy and just everything.
Well, I mean, even their, like, timelines only. The like Brigham Young, his marriage to his first wife who died, and then his second wife, and no other marriages were listed.
Absolutely, but also, that's an obvious omission. But all of these elements of the family, all these elements of like the women who they would send back east to go to medical school, who were midwives, who were taking on all these roles. That the 19th century Mormon women who had a much bigger influence, who were blessing babies and blessing the sick and basically very independent from the men, all that's been erased too, because we have this Ozzie and Harriet idea of the family, and so we built this
wall
around
that. Well, and that's how we gained the acceptance that we have in America, was through that. The focus on the family.
Well, it's this
that
Me
America,
Too thing.
Yeah,
American
can
values
appreciate
on
that.
Steroids.
Right.
Right. And so that, you know, they talk of tolerance, but to break that down and then to have, legitimized, recognized familial organizations that don't match this fetish that the church has put forth, that are successful fundamentally undermines what the church stands
well,
on.
Well, and when they moved out of polygamy and they redefined marriage as man and a woman, and they also redefined that for their ceremonies in the temple, and they kind of like lined up all their doctrine behind man and woman is the, you know, eternal unit, they would have to do another major switch like they did with after polygamy, and that was painful. That was a painful switch. If they were to accept gay marriage, there would be a lot of ramifications.
Yeah.
So what's the all-encompassing statement that you can make on tolerance now after that?
Well, I was going to tie it back into tolerance because that's important because we're not talking about the family thing. We're talking about tolerance.
And if I can, do you think that most Mormons, especially in the Valley, think that they are tolerant?
I think most everybody thinks they're tolerant.
Right. Well, especially LDS people, right? And hence his talk, Boyd K. Packer's talk, isn't that starting from the proposition that
tolerance
we are
a
tolerant
virtue?
People? Yeah, that and then Monson at the end apparently came out and reiterated that.
And I think actually in a lot of ways the Mormons are very tolerant. When you compare them to evangelicals, Mormons are much more culturally tolerant than evangelicals are. When's the last time you saw Mormons protesting anything?
Well, yeah.
An abortion clinic or anything.
No, I think, I'm in agreement with you there. Yeah, I don't see that. I think you see Mormons as a poster child for tolerance when it comes to people making comparisons between other religions. So you've got maybe a Jainist or a Buddhist over here, and they're in the far left, and then you got a jihadist on the far right, and Mormons are probably closer to a Buddhist and a Jainist, right?
You think?
They advertised in the playbill of the Book of Mormon musical in three half-page locations.
But that's their way of fighting back. It's not their way of being tolerant.
It's a very tolerant way of fighting back.
Well, that's why I find this question so interesting. I agree with you because Mormons are this very interesting mix of tolerance and intolerance. Yeah. And I want to talk about ex-Mormons and I want to talk about atheists and all this because this becomes this interesting thing. We established that you can't have just blanket tolerance, even though a lot of people say they are. So you have to draw these boundaries around it.
But that's
what's interesting here.
I think also, before we go further, can we talk about the word tolerance itself?
Sure.
Because I think...
Tolerance of what? Before you even get to the defining tolerance.
Tolerance in and of itself implies that you don't like, you don't necessarily agree with that, whatever that thing is.
That's why. Be in the world, but not of it.
Oh, you're saying it has a negative connotation to begin with.
But for who?
The person who's tolerating something.
I never viewed that in LDS culture that tolerance was a derogatory term.
Well, you don't ever say I tolerate ice cream.
Right.
Right.
It's something that you're putting up with that you
don't like.
That's
long suffering. That's enduring to the
exactly,
end.
Exactly, which right. Mormons embrace.
Yeah.
Whatever is the object of your verb tolerance there, you're casting dispersion on it. I think that's what you're trying to say.
Whatever you're tolerant of, yes.
It's not a virtue. Yes. It's not a value. It's just something that you're going to put up with.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Understood.
Okay.
So when we look at this tolerance, you know, that where Mormons are not likely to go down to Hyatt Nashbury and throw Molotov cocktails or walk with signs, or the reaction that we saw at the LA Temple after Prop 8, you know, where there was graffiti and there was just all sorts of things. That would never be a Mormon action.
Right.
But they operate behind the scenes with money and attorneys and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and mainstream Mormons are unlikely to act in a group unless they have a leader, you know, from above.
Yes.
So this might be a good opportunity to talk about what behaviors. So we're talking about the macro schedule. We're talking about Prop 8. And obviously they've drawn a line. We talked about why it's important for them to not tolerate that, but still seem tolerant. Let's put our eyes inside the church right now.
Okay.
And there's an interesting ad campaign that they just started. They have this really pretty blonde who's covered in tattoos. I don't know if you guys have seen this. And the church is pushing this ad. She's got a Book of Mormon. And then I think there's an obligatory, you know, African American person, you know, which is funny to your thing. You know, whenever you display something, say, I'm tolerant of this, then it's basically, no, you're not. Otherwise, you wouldn't say anything about it. You know?
Well, no, you're tolerant. You just don't accept it. You don't like it. You don't
right.
agree with it.
Like, why does the church have to say we're tolerant and show a picture of a black person? So the church is putting this ad campaign out to say, look how tolerant, look how open-minded we are. There is nothing in the baptismal questions. If you have tattoos, they're going to keep you out of the church.
Or multiple earrings. And locations.
But you will be looked down upon.
If they can see them.
Well, I would ask a question. How I have not experienced tolerance as I've left the church or become critical. So you asked us to look within the church. The tolerance is extremely low if you're critical within or if you even leave. If you leave even quietly, if you leave softly, the family or the friends and the neighbors and the ward are hostile.
I think you're right. I want to come back to that. Okay. And I'm going to point the finger and say the hostility goes both directions. But we'll get there. Let's look inside a little. Let's talk about our tattoos. Let's talk about shaming. So, because the church is ostensibly on paper tolerant of tattoos, right? Although they talk against it. But what's going to happen? Or how does the church keep people in line? How does the church exercise intolerance for its membership? There's a huge cultural thing. People who don't fit the norm, people who wear pants to church or wear sleeveless things, they won't get asked to pray. They won't get asked to speak. They won't get put into leadership callings. They'll be marginalized.
I thought you just needed a dress in order to not pray.
It depends on which sex
not
you
anymore.
Are.
But now you just wear a charcoal color pants suit and you're out still. You know, you got to dress like a.
Gotcha.
So there's these subtle methods of control where intolerance is very passive aggressively executed in the church. And it's almost sickening to watch these ad campaigns, these I'm a Mormon, they put Brandon Flowers, you know, the lead singer for the Killers.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows what's going on there. That if Brandon weren't a multi, you know, millionaire, he would be ostracized and excommunicated, right? We're all in agreement of that, right?
Poor guy.
Maybe he's a really great home teacher.
Maybe he is, but I've listened to his music. This guy is not somebody who embraces Mormon values. So there's an intolerance that is very pervasive, because if you go to some other, especially liberal churches, they can be very tolerant of that. As a matter of fact, this thing that the church is trying to do with this ad campaign with tattoos, especially evangelical churches love this sort of thing. They love to put out ex-cons or ex-porn stars or things like that to show that they have found Jesus and because they have a fundamental philosophy of, it doesn't matter what you do. The important thing is accepting Christ into your heart. But for Mormonism has embraced this American exceptionalism and this materialistic, we're great because we've been elected to be great, and that's manifest in our big houses and our financial success and our MBAs and our suits.
But not only that, but you have to have works, not just faith, to get into heaven. So people who you can see the evidence of, like, their naughty behavior, like a tattoo, is sort of like, look, I'm naughty. Then it's obvious that that person isn't, like, falling in line.
But
action wise.
But why that's important is because it undermines the system, right? Because the church and the cult of the church is built on a culture of conformity. And once you don't marginalize the nonconformists, you have a problem. And it's like people who've been out of the church for a long time or people who are liberal thinkers look at something like homosexual marriage and they say, I don't understand what the issue is here at all. You know, this is a legal arrangement. It has to do with health care, it has to do with child care, it has to do all this stuff. Why do you not want to give this to part of the population? Because, as I keep saying, the church has fetishized this nuclear family. To allow that to coexist undermines the whole system that the church is on. So tolerance becomes this virtue in as much as you're doing it in a patronizing sort of way. Oh, isn't she cute? Look, she had this up life. We gave her the Book of Mormon, and now she's wearing this white dress. We can see the tattoos that she's, but we're not going to put her in a leadership position because that undermines the system, and we're not going to tolerate that.
And that's when they're defining that behavior that doesn't fit within their norm as something that's, you know, unethical or immoral, right?
Yeah, and unethical and immoral is just a subset of this greater mind process that we're all involved in, which is just us and them.
Yeah, you step outside the church, and that ethical moral act or behavior becomes reversed to men to be married, you know, to prohibit them from getting married. That's an immoral, unethical thing. So that we become, those of us that have left, become intolerant. We're far more, I think, outside of the church, intolerant of these items that we think. So there's, I think, as you start to mature and broaden your philosophical ideas, you become a little bit more intolerant of a lot of these things that we used to think we were. It's like going the full spectrum.
Yes,
right.
Because tolerance, I think, where I'm trying to go, is about border keeping, and that's where we say, well, what's tolerable and what's not? And that's fundamental to what defines who we are.
Well, and it's even more than that, like what I was saying about the definition of tolerance, is you have us who are accepted. Then you have this little margin that you tolerate, and then it's all of them.
Right, because the borders are fuzzy. And there's a patronage. I mean, every culture, not to get all Marxian here, but every culture has its proletariat and its intelligentsia. And I don't care what you are, you can always find that breakdown. And the proletariat are the worker bees who pay the bills, and the intelligentsia run everything. And that tolerance oftentimes defines that gap. Because you have to have followers. Not everybody can be leaders. And so you're going to have a different set of rules for those folks because you have to. You can't have the high standards for everybody. But as we define tolerance and we're gatekeeping about what makes us us, because once that breaks down and there is not a unifying definition of what we are, the organization behind that ceases to have any purpose and it will dissolve or evolve into something. And evolve is oftentimes violent, right? The and
revolution.
Not just in terms of blood, but once the core tenets of an organization stop providing value, you know, once the worship of Caesar didn't really provide a lot of cohesion to the Greeks, then something else will come in and take its place. So organizations have to border keep that. Otherwise, they become irrelevant and they disappear. They go away.
And right now, Mormonism is pretty much defined by what you were saying, the nuclear family. That's what they've been pushing for the past 50 years or more. As who they are.
Well, yeah. If you were to make a list of the most important things to Mormonism, it's chastity, it's nuclear family, it's caffeine, you know, like coffee and cigarettes. It's these things that make this visible sign that we are Mormons, that make you identify.
It's our brand.
Yeah, it's the brand.
Absolutely our brand, right? And those are the things that we can't be tolerant of, because they take apart what's going on. So everything, like I said, everything Packer says in his talk about marriage, somebody in favor of gay rights could say everything verbatim, because it would be an argument for the sanctity of marriage, saying, all right, well, then we'll not have these people live in sin anymore. They're going to get married and stabilize our culture.
We have to defend our brand.
We have to defend our brand, absolutely.
Yeah. And you see that in all great corporations. Elon Musk with the Tesla car that he got a bad review because somebody had took some liberties with his vehicle, and he went out and defended his brand in a very persuasive way. It seems to be a very corporative
move.
Yeah,
and in terms of that, it's the values of a corporation. Whenever you start working for a new company, after you've done this a few times, you pay very close attention. How do we talk to each other? How do we address each other? What's okay? What's not okay? And you don't even have to read the book, because the book doesn't matter. You know, you watch the people who are your
observe,
peers.
Yeah.
And that's very important in terms of tolerance. So yeah.
Who can you not criticize? That's the.
So before we start talking about when people leave, I turn the mirror on myself a little bit. I've done this in the past. I've asked myself, am I tolerant or not? And for myself, after thinking about this for quite a bit, I'm very tolerant of behavior, and I'm not very tolerant of ideas.
Are you sure about the behavior side of things, though?
Yeah, that's. I'm wondering that too.
All right, well, hold your horses.
Okay, then well, we'll let you define it.
Then I'll let you guys cut loose. I don't necessarily define myself as a really tolerant person. Meaning, if you say something I disagree with, I'll argue with you about it. I don't have this passive tolerance that all ideas are equal, all religions are equal, all philosophies are
equal. And that you shouldn't criticize anything.
And you shouldn't criticize. I believe strongly in this strong marketplace of ideas. That being said, I believe strongly in the First Amendment. So I think that you have the right, culturally, in my mind, to say what you want.
Thank your Jesus.
But John, then you are tolerant. You're just not accepting of the ideas. You're switching those terms.
Well, these are foggy things. But I believe that once you put an idea out there, you're fair game. You know, now if somebody's talking to their friend in the mall, you overhear it. Obviously not. But if you're recording your voice and publishing it to the world, you're fair game, uh-oh, right? So anybody.
But you're tolerant of that.
Of their ability to do it. The right to be able to do
right.
That.
Right.
But you tolerate
the entertainment of the idea. But at least momentarily, like, to consider it.
I'm very intolerant of the church. Like, I'm highly critical of the church. Right?
Isn't that a behavior thing that you're talking about? I'm tolerant of behavior, but I'm intolerant of ideas. But isn't the church is everything you're seeing, isn't that mostly just the behavior of the church that you're
So I don't want to criminalize anything the church does, right?
Okay.
Well, then you're tolerant.
Well, that's my behavioral tolerance, right? Now, there might be elements where I don't think churches should have tax exemption for non-charitable activities,
right?
And that's something that I believe strongly in, and I would fight against. But I wouldn't want to make illegal, like for example, was it Hitchens or one of those guys was talking about. And it was a rhetorical thing, but was talking about making it criminal to indoctrinate children into religion.
How would you ever prove that?
Well, I mean, there's obvious problems with it. That's why I say it was rhetorical. But there comes a time when, because we tolerate the existence of even stupid ideas, we have to allow them to have legs. And that's where, as a society, if you get into saying, all right, creationism is causing all sorts of problems. It screws up people's thinking. So we are going to outlaw the teaching of creationism in private schools, for example. You could come to that sort of conclusion.
Well, we have.
Wait,
come to that conclusion.
in private schools.
You said public.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're saying in a school environment in America, if it's going to be like counted as education, there can be no creationism taught.
Right. Yeah, I would work to set curriculum and have curriculum set by experts and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the accreditation of a university is
right. But I wouldn't outlaw the teaching of creationism.
Right.
So and that's where.
But so there's such a fuzzy line between acceptance and tolerance.
This was better work out. A more current issue would be Boy Scouts and homosexuality, homosexual leaders within it. Right. So there's already been a Supreme Court case that judged that. They're not going to tread upon the rights of a organization, and yet still you see social pressures. Even if the legal side had no sway on it, you still see the social pressures coming into play now with the financial backers pulling away and applying pressure.
Yeah, and I would say that Boy Scouts in my worldview are completely within the rights to not allow homosexuals or atheists.
Right. So if you were providing financials to support to the Boy Scouts of America, whatever it is, the $20 that they ask you to contribute every year, even if you don't have a kid in the program, but you're a member of the church, the Friends of Scouting program, would you withhold, making that donation if you were opposed to that?
Yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, I won't give to the United Way either, because the United Way is a major contributor to the Boy Scouts.
So you tolerate their right to do that, but you won't support them.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. So it's a passive... It's a passive.
If you want to open up a whites
it's a
only
passive intolerance.
If you want to open up a whites
right,
only swimming pool
yeah.
and it's a private pool, fine, go ahead.
Right.
If you want to have a bar where you smoke,
you can
go ahead.
Voice against it. You're not going to support it if an opportunity
right.
arises where you've got a choice to make between going to the pool, the racist pool, or the color friendly pool. You're going to go with the color friendly pool.
I am completely intolerant of the idea mm-hmm. of having racist pools,
right.
but I believe you should be able to have them.
So you're tolerant of the action. I thought you said you were intolerant of the action.
No, I'm tolerant of ideas. I'm intolerant of behaviors. Right.
Wait, but you're saying the opposite.
Now you're playing Jedi mind tricks on me.
Because you said that you're tolerant of the.
I'm tolerant of ideas.
You're tolerant of ideas.
Right.
Do you think you've become more tolerant or less?
But actually, you just said you were intolerant of the idea of having a all-white swimming pool, but you were tolerant of their right to have a pool.
Right. I would fight against it. Right. I would tell them.
I
wouldn't try to shut it down. I wouldn't try to set laws that prevent people from behaving.
So you would try to pressure them into closing it down, but you wouldn't try to work with the law to get it illegal.
Right. I don't like hate speech laws.
You hate it?
I don't like those laws on the books. And I know that I'm specifically pushing it out into tricky territory. And I'm talking about me, but this applies to...
Why is it that you hate it?
Why what?
Yeah, why is it that you hate the hate speech laws?
Because you then have... You're then defining tolerance. You're going in and saying, these ideas are good, these ideas are bad. Yeah. And I think every idea should be open to the marketplace of ideas, which entails intolerance. Now, let's go to a lot of Christians, and Mormons especially.
But you have a problem of minority, where a majority of the people are saying very hateful things about a minority of people who don't have power to, like, voice.
I think that's a different problem, inequality. Because, like, if you say, in theory, that the Southerners should have been able to have whites-only organizations... You have a whole reparation problem from institutionalized racism, but a lot of that was tacitly endorsed and approved and funded by the government. And that's another issue. You know, I think we can tell the government you can't segregate because the government is the people collectively. But I just highlight to say these are really tricky issues, and they're tricky issues for the church too. Because how do you frame that intolerance? Now let's talk about apostasy. In any fundamentalist organization, they divide the world into three pools, and we've talked about this before. There are us, and there are them. Then there's us on the inside. There's them, the outsiders, the mission field, right? And then there's the apostates, and everybody falls into those three categories. And for fundamentalist religions, apostates are subhuman. They have no rights whatsoever. So oftentimes in organizations, even kind of liberal ones, they'll be very tolerant to their neighbors. And Joseph Smith is this way. He was very tolerant to folks who didn't buy into Mormonism, but that didn't cause them problems.
Yeah, once you did.
Once you did and you got out, then you were in trouble. There was no love, no mercy for those
folks. Well, I think part of the reason for that
was
that he was what?
Protect the brand.
Yeah.
It is in jeopardy, you know.
Yeah. But also the reason why he was tolerant of people who had never been Mormon is because they were still potential Mormons.
I think that's definitely an element. But there's also this element of non-threatening, not being a threat. Right. Like, yeah. You know, like Mormons don't talk a lot about Hindus. Right? Even though there's a billion
they're not on their radar.
Change of them, right?
Right.
Yeah, they're just not a threat to Mormonism. Mormonism is an American institution, and it prospers in Anglophilic, is that a good word?
Ooh, nice. I like it.
So you know, Hinduism just they don't care about it. It's the great other. And it's not.
And they're not even really potential converts. I mean, they're just not really on the radar for Mormons.
It's too much work to get them on board.
Yeah.
You kind of slim down the number of gods.
Right. Stop.
So when apostates leave, so in other words, Hindus do not, we talked about the core values that define us, defines our brand, that defines who we are. Hindus do not mess with that at all. They're just completely outside that system. And whatever marital laws are passed in India, we don't, like, you don't see the church getting up in arms about all these countries that where polygamy is legal, right?
Right.
They just don't care. It doesn't affect them. But they get really bent out of shape if California wants to legalize non-traditional marriage. See, I even buy into the rhetoric. I say non-traditional marriage.
Well, it is non-traditional.
Just what tradition are you starting with?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's not
their
very
tradition.
American tradition. I mean,
yes.
You know, European, yeah. Right?
Yes. Yeah. A wife.
It's traditional.
A wife, two dogs, and a mistress. Or, sorry. Two kids and a mistress.
Apostates attack philosophically the core values. They attack philosophically what it is that we tolerate and what we don't tolerate. They go to the heart of the very principle of tolerance and what makes us tolerant.
Well, and it kind of messes up who we are. It fuzzies the lines. If you have people who have been and they know the secrets and they know the culture, and then they're not anymore.
And it destroys the system, right?
Yeah, clearly Mormons are less tolerant of apostates. Yeah,
and in reverse, apostates get all bent out of shape about stuff that the church does that all sort of other people are
right.
doing that they don't, they doesn't bother.
Right.
It's back
yeah.
to the question I asked you. When you left the church, did you become more tolerant or less tolerant? You think of yourself as becoming more tolerant, but mm-hmm. in reality, what did you become as you left the church?
Well, it's not a fair question for me. Just because I'm an exception here because I didn't change my worldviews very
Dodge.
Much. like for example, I've seen tons of ex-Mormons who go from being right-wingers to left-wingers. Like when they leave the church, they flip politically.
Well, and they
I didn't
flip
change politically at all.
Action-wise too. Anything that the church said, don't do this, then as soon as they leave, they say, well, the church said don't do this, so I'm going to do it.
So
it's a total reversal, and they accept and embrace those things that they used to be intolerant of.
But there's like sacramental things like don't drink this or don't. That didn't have a morality context associated with it. That was an obedience concept associated with it.
It was like, morality too.
The word of wisdom?
For me, it was.
Well, but it was. I would argue that it's an obedience problem. If you break it, you know, it's not a. having a drink of alcohol is not going to affect your entrance into the celestial kingdom, not one drink.
Well, yeah, what wouldn't it? Yeah, what? Yeah, your disobedience.
Disobedience would. That's,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Well, but when it came to think of an ethical issue, like I think there's probably some fine lines within the church regarding women. For instance, like reproductive rights of women. Did you change your position on reproductive rights of women when you left the church?
Actually, I didn't. That's why I say I'm not a good.
Okay. Well. I don't know what they are.
Reproductive rights. Before I left the church, I believe abortion should be legal, but I believed it was immoral. And I even then I believed that morality of it, or the immorality of it, ascended over time. So I'm not a good but.
So
I mean,
I do think abortion currently is immoral.
Well.
John doesn't. What?
So,
just trying to see if there was if
holy
it's
shit.
Just defines, just defines back. Getting back to
tolerance. What the meaning of the word is?
When we leave the church, do we become more or less tolerant?
Well, so morality,
as everybody that's listening to this in the past and present future,
I think I became definitely more tolerant.
You became
like,
more tolerant.
Definitely more tolerant.
So, while it was okay for. Corporal punishment of children within a certain aspect of the church, right? Spare the rod, spoil the child, right? It's right there. And
but I never believed that.
But it's still morally justifiable. Slavery
it's morally justifiable.
Right?
But you're saying, but you were asking individually. I feel like there are more things I became more tolerant of than.
And there's things you became less tolerant. I think, let me interpret
your
what you're saying.
Your point is...
No, I think you became... When you say you became more tolerant...
Well, okay. Now I'm switching the terms. I became more accepting of
more
a
accepting.
Lot of things.
Of some things. Because I think what you're trying to say, or I'm going to put words in your mouth, and just
put
me
there.
Wrong.
I don't like them, I'll spit them out.
We have this tolerance bubble around us. We take from where we are, and then we have this certain distance that you can be different from me, and that's tolerant. And that's what I tolerate. And what happens to a lot of people when they leave the church is they move their position. They move their X, Y, but their bubble stays the same size.
Uh-huh.
Just things shift around in it, what they're tolerant of and what they're not tolerant of.
Okay.
Is that what you're saying, Tyson?
Do you think you're more tolerant?
No, I think I'm less tolerant.
What are you?
Because the morals and ethics were changed, the epistemology of how you define what is right and wrong. As soon as that gets switched up, then you can say, look, while I was in the church, I was tolerant of other people smoking. I didn't want it to happen within my family or something like that. But now I'm less tolerant of smoking because I know that it's not only is it damaging to your health, but secondhand smoke is damaging to mine, and it's damaging to the entire health system.
But didn't you know that before?
I will vote for laws against smoking in public as a result. Less tolerant.
So I'm sort of with you, except I don't believe in morality. I don't believe the word has any meaning. I think we have consequence for action, right. And that's basically
it. I'm making up the definition. That, right. The things that would.
And we if we go back
so
to like
things
Sam
that
Harris's
have natural consequences, you are less tolerant of than you would have been. Like as a believer, you would have tolerated them because you were supposed to.
Only because I thought it was ethically. I was ethically justified to do so. For instance, thinking that women's reproductive rights should be restricted. Now I don't tolerate that idea that women's rights are or should be restricted. I think that women should have control over their bodies.
But then you're more tolerant of their right.
Yes. But they already had that right. I'm not trying to restrict it.
Right, but you're
yeah. Well, yeah, my viewpoint did change, but I'm becoming more narrow on.
I think that's more tolerant.
Well, no, it's just
I'm not tolerant of the other opinion. I'm not tolerant of
right, but now
women's...
you're tolerant of their right to do it.
Yes,
or actually that's, accepting. That's, it's not well, even
yeah.
tolerance.
Yeah.
But you are intolerant of people who say
yes,
you can't
just
do that.
It's a matter of what you've defined.
Yeah, like John said, it's almost like your bubble just like moves
yeah,
across the,
shifted,
the checkerboard.
But it also got a little bit smaller on several items.
I don't know that mine did because I was so naive and so like.
But I also think society as a whole has become less and less tolerant, right? We used to.
I don't think so.
I think on some aspects.
Well, like women and voting or slavery or.
But you're using like the reverse. You're saying they're intolerant of intolerance. They're becoming less tolerant of intolerance. But I think that's becoming more tolerant of the things that the other people were being intolerant of.
Gun control. More tolerant of people owning guns. I mean, isn't that the conversation everybody's having nowadays? It's the right to own guns. No, we want to restrict that right. We're less tolerant. We want to restrict that. We want to restrict people's rights.
But a lot of liberals wouldn't want to restrict those.
Liberal against regulation? Is there such a thing?
Yeah.
Environmental protections? Restrictions on what comes out of the backside of your car? Right.
Yeah.
Water restrictions.
There's a great show that I like to watch. I don't know if a lot of people watch it. It's really crude. Called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Anybody watch the show? It's about these four narcissists who own a bar in Philadelphia. But in one of the episodes, they decide that they're going to go all American and they're going to allow anything in their bar. So it starts out with, they're just like, giving out beads and titty flashing, and then they get to the point. There's people like shooting heroin. There's gambling going on, and it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And
which is what happens when everybody leaves the church. That's what we know,
right? And that's what I'm saying. This borderline keeping. But you know, as you talk about people leaving the church and having been involved in the ex-Mormon community now for years and years, and watching it and observing it and seeing what problems come up, you know, it's funny that. Ex-Mormons fancy themselves as tolerant, but here's an example I've seen. I've seen parties where people who smoke cigarettes will go outside on the back porch and smoke in the back porch. There's other ex-Mormons who fancy themselves to be super tolerant who won't go to those parties anymore because they're smokers who are present. Not that they're smoking in the house,
but
they're smokers that are there.
Yeah.
And that gets extended to all sorts of, you know, rather benign behaviors.
But that was there when they were Mormons too. That doesn't have anything to do with being an ex-Mormon.
There's this problem that the people leave the church and suddenly fancy themselves
they think they're
being
more
super tolerant. because they've reversed some of these positions that they had before. But oftentimes they're trading one set of prejudice for another set of prejudice. But the kicker, the tricky part of that is our first assertion that where do you say I'm not tolerant of that? You know, like where do you push back against that? Where do you stand on things like the Zion curtain? You know, you don't live in Utah.
No, I don't.
The Zion curtain is this law in Utah that if you are preparing drinks, you have to have a barrier
so
children can't see you mixing a Bloody Mary because that would make them.
You know, there's along those same lines. There's a current law in California that's being debated right now as to whether or not they do that with cigarettes because they've done some studies as to if cigarettes are available just to look at. That there's an increase in the adoption of smoking by youth as soon as they reach age.
Well, then they need to hide all the candy too, because I'm sure that the same correlation.
You're not going to find an argument for me because I'm fairly left on the issue, but I mean that only supports that
right. Well, I believe, for example, I believe 100 years in the future, or 300 years, or whenever we get to that point, advertising will basically be banned, especially advertising against children.
More restrictive, less tolerant.
Because we'll realize that here's something going on that shouldn't be happening, that the people are being manipulated psychologically. So we say, same reason public smoking ban. I'm all for public smoking bans. Right. I'm not for private smoking bans. If you want to open a biker bar where you can smoke cigars.
Yeah, but isn't that similar to Mormons saying, we don't mind if, you know, gay people live together. We just don't want to see them publicly.
Well, that's a new position. That's what's funny, because that goes back to it has nothing to do with morality.
It's an evolving position.
And this is where I go to morality anyway. I dropped the bomb a little while ago saying I didn't believe in morality. Because if you ask people, say, all right, what are the biggest moral issues? And with Mormons, they would just say sex, sex, and sex. Everybody else would say, well,
Forget coffee.
Mayhem.
Yeah, something that hurts other people.
But those things, you know, if you take murder, which would be on the top of everybody's list, which is really just a loaded word for killing people, well, find me any sort of organization out there that doesn't believe in killing people.
So, wait, that does believe Jainism. In killing people.
Okay, so there's only one.
they're rare. So the things that people would say are most moral, the organizations will all carve themselves exemptions for it. So morality becomes, once again, gatekeeping between us and them.
Yeah.
And that's why it's easy to focus morality on drinking coffee or tea and not on, like, stabbing somebody with a bayonet, because Mormon boys have to go do that. But we can make them not drink coffee. So there becomes this,
oh, and the Amish,
this border
too.
Protection.
They won't fight either.
Well,
not that we know.
Wait, Quaker. It's Quakers.
I bet if we were to look at
I thought the Amish could...
Jehovah's Witnesses won't fight.
As soon as you say there's no exceptions to the rule,
Jehovah's Witness is a great one because Jehovah's Witnesses won't fight in war, but you listen to their rhetoric and it is full of blood and destruction. Yeah, they are just chomping at the bit to watch everybody cut asunder. So you can't tell me that's not violent.
They're just hoping Jesus does it for them.
I mean, that's a Jehovah's Witness wet dream, is watching the world get...
No, I don't think so.
They're just...
I mean...
Cowards.
Yeah, we have Jehovah's Witnesses... friends who used to be, and they were scared, so scared of that stuff. They were not chomping at the bit and waiting for that.
They might have been scared individually, but as a religion,
they really believed it.
It fetishizes that violence.
They really believed it.
Oh crap, this is going to happen.
So much that they didn't have children because they didn't
want to bring people in the world that are going to go through all of this pain and suffering.
That's okay,
very kind of them.
Yeah.
So where do we end up here?
We ended?
No.
Heroic.
That's just...
Wait,
that's
so...
Pillow talk.
Homosexuality for Mormons. I guess what we're saying is to tolerate things that don't hurt other people and to not tolerate things that do hurt other people. Is that where we're coming down?
No, I don't know about we. where I'm coming down is tolerance is about the brand, is about identity. It's about protecting who we are as opposed to everybody else.
It's a pernicious form of tolerance.
And it really has precious little to do with any sort of abstract morality. Because so the border keeping is more important than any sort of abstract morality, because I can find exceptions to any kind of morality.
And morality
there
is always shifting.
Jainism, Buddhism sometimes have that killing is always wrong. It's just a degree of wrongness.
Yeah.
Well, Mormonism's that way too.
Christians don't have that sort of idea of that. Yeah. They tend to black and white things more. There's good and there's evil and they're in an eternal war.
But if you're talking about killing people, everybody, it's nuanced for everybody. Nobody's going to say it's always wrong to kill. Well, some people might.
Well, that's why.
No, I think you could make a logical position that it's wrong to kill, even
morally.
To find what's moral, but even if you, and this is perhaps going off on a tangent, but even if you do think, I mean, because what you're interested in when you want to murder somebody is their suffering. But even when there's an absence of morals, if you want somebody else to suffer. And you have a fairly atheistic position. You don't want them to die. That's the end of suffering. So murder is, you know, that's the easy way out. Hmm. And a good movie called The Secret in Our Eyes is a.
Oh, I thought you were going to go to a Saw. But
haven't seen those.
I haven't either.
Nonetheless, I mean, in that position, you know, whether you want somebody to be perfectly happy or you want somebody to be perfectly miserable, keeping them alive. Is going to serve that purpose, which is where I think you see a lot of these, you know, secular Western European nations coming down as well.
Yeah, because ultimately what's happening is there's a cultural methodology. For atheists, it's about pumped up rhetoric, right? That's yeah. the tool of the new atheism. For the you know, in the Middle Ages it was torture, right? I mean they would put you on the rack, you know. And there's a way we enforce our core values. For Mormons, it's about passive aggressiveness and it's about conformity. And it's about the unwritten order of things, right? And the tattoo thing is a wink and a nod, and there'll always be these second class citizens. And it's the same thing with conference talk, the conference prayers. Okay, so two women gave prayers. Two women. And they were I didn't even see it, but I guarantee they were wearing pastels, right? They weren't wearing a business suit.
Anybody else here take a nap while conference was going on? Anybody else use conference as a sedative?
So tolerance is something that you can't really look at the church and say, ha ha, look how ironic it is that they're talking about this tolerance thing. And look how superior we are sitting outside the church because we're much better than Brother Packer with his. We're under attack and our transcendent importance of our values. That's what everybody says. We all believe in the transcendent importance of our values. Otherwise you'd switch your values. And our next podcast we're recording in a few days will deal with the persecution complex. I think this is a
It ties in very cleanly into the persecution because that's they love being persecuted. Every news release that comes out, it's like, it's so bad what those other people are going through. We know exactly what it is because we were persecuted too.
But ex-Mormons enjoy being persecuted.
Because ex-Mormons have to get an identity. And there's an identity slide. But ex-Mormons are identified, by identity slide meaning when people first leave the church, they sort of identify themselves as ex-Mormons. And then they eventually come into something else. They become a Catholic. They become a new atheist. They become
an engineer.
Whatever it is that takes their time. But at the beginning, it's this reversing of this old thing. What are you? I am not that. That's how they first define themselves. So they're doing the same game, and they bring the same passive aggressive culture with them that they had when they were in the church. So tolerance is about protecting our core values, protecting our identity, and about how we enforce that and that around us. And that's what the church is doing. And it's important because otherwise the church loses itself to the world. If the church suddenly says, "All right, we're tolerant. We're going to let people join who you can be living in sin, and you know you can have as many earrings as you want, man or woman. It doesn't matter."
But it's one thing to be tolerant of them doing that outside of your organization. What you're talking about is acceptance.
Well,
you can come into our circle. But I'm just like, if people would be more tolerant of what other people are doing that's not really harmful to you.
I agree that's a value, but I'm my point is that hardly anybody espouses that. They have their own pet things and they go for that. And if the church, you know, there's all these organizations out there pushing for ordination of women, pushing for gays in the church. pushing for all these sort of things. These are values that I the equality of the sexes, you know, no discrimination based on gender or sexual identification or anything. I'm all for that. But it destroys the church. I'm not naive. The church has to defend its border.
The church as it presently exists.
Right.
And then what does it become? Like, and it has scary. To go through a value shift.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But it's been doing that since 1830, whatever.
But that's ultimately at the core of tolerance and what we tolerate and what we don't. And that's the key issue.
Yeah.
So tolerance, I would say, cut them a little bit of slack because you're all just as intolerant bastards as they are.
Right.
They just have more money.
Yeah.
And a bully pulpit.
Yeah.
I do. I'm going to think more, Tyson, about your idea of whether I'm more or less tolerant. But I don't know that I can do that self-reflectively because
you think you're more tolerant now.
Well, I'll give you an example, like alcohol. I was very tolerant of other people, even as a member. Like, I didn't think it was immoral for them to drink alcohol,
right. But
for me, it was. Mm-hmm. So, and it took me a long time before I ever took a drink. I was well out of the church. There's other factors, you know, worry about alcoholism and I'm overweight and it's got calories in it and stuff like that. But I didn't change my values as much.
Well, I don't think alcohol is a good example. There's good evidence that a glass of red wine a day is actually beneficial for you. So yeah, you could be tolerant from it before and tolerant of it after. I don't see why there would be a shift in your opinion there, but smoking. Mm-hmm. Were you more tolerant of people smoking before and this?
I'm more tolerant now.
You're more tolerant now in public with your kids around.
Yeah.
You're okay with them lighting up?
I would walk away from them.
From your kids lighting up?
I'm not okay with them lighting up, but I would be tolerant of it. Like,
you wouldn't be like, hey, kids, like,
this, well, because this was, you can't control other people. It's not such a horrible thing that I feel like it's worth my time and effort to try to control somebody else's behavior about.
You,
it doesn't affect me enough to worry about it. Like,
well, that you know of, but if you realize that there's a potential, and I'm just making this up, but if you realize that there was, maybe I shouldn't make it up, but there's a stronger correlation than you realize between secondhand smoke and some form of cancer, would you become more or less tolerant of I mean, if it was
something that was obviously very harmful to me and my kids, I would probably fight against it.
You'd be a little bit less tolerant.
Yeah.
And maybe I can come up with another example.
But when I was in the church, I was very intolerant of people who would smoke because I thought that they were evil.
I want to usurp you guys' point for a second here. When Zilph and I lived on the East Coast, we were Unitarians. Like, what the define the community and what they worried about was very different from what the church worries about and what ex-Mormons worry about. Having been around the ex-Mormons for a while, I'll tell you what divides ex-Mormon community. Smoking, drinking, sex, all the things that Mormons are obsessed about,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like the Unitarian Fellowship out on the East Coast, they didn't give a damn who you slept with. They just did not care. It just didn't matter. No one was concerned about it. Ex-Mormons are still highly concerned about who everybody is sleeping with. And they're highly concerned about alcohol intake. They're highly concerned about smoking because they're ex-Mormons. Right?
You're saying we're just as tribal now than we were before?
We're on the same roadmap. We're just fighting about the same stuff. And
we're still monkeys.
So
Bonobos.
That's where that bubble, that bubble just moves, you know, so.
Actually, come to find out, I'm sorry.
Bonobos
are not as cooperative as humans. I just learned that. I mean, NPR is the,
you learned
it's, from
experience.
It's the language of every ex-Mormon. No, not from experience. I just learned that.
Wait, you said
not by faith.
Cooperative or
no, they're far
copulative.
Not copulative. No, they're far less cooperative. And that's one of the traits.
Well, I thought that's what they used sex for. Bonobos use sex as a social
well, for
lubricant.
Instance, when coming to, if they're searching out for food, they're less cooperative than we are because, in other words, we are a far more social primate than a bonobo is. So a bonobo, while we might look at their sexual behaviors and say, yeah, they got it right, or they're like us, draw whatever conclusion you have there. But when it comes to what they've, what this is what I heard was that when it comes to social cooperation, you know, where you see animals cooperating together to obtain food, that we humans, us primates, are really, we're exceptionally good at cooperation, far more than bonobos are. They'll bicker and fight amongst themselves
until somebody turns around for, you know, and a feel good moment.
I think that cooperation comes from culture.
Yeah.
And culture.
Or evolved.
Evolved,
yes,
right.
Our culture, yes.
The reason we're far more cooperative is because we're more cultural. And that culture comes from shared values.
Right.
Shared values come from the borders, defining what we believe and what we don't
believe. Or it could have been the other way around, that because we evolved that way, that religion is just an adaptation of our evolved culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Our evolved culture. But the point I'm getting to is that, and that is what tolerance is about.
Yeah.
Because tolerance is what defines us and them.
Yeah.
So it comes full circle.
Every group has to have intolerance.
We can't criticize the church merely for being intolerant. Intolerance is a transitive verb, and you always have to talk about it in terms of whatever the object is.
Yeah.
That tolerance is not a value. It's neither. It's
it depends on what you're being tolerant of.
It depends completely on what you're being tolerant of and what the circumstances are. And criticizing the church for being intolerant is really a cheap shot. And intellectually,
that's true.
It's easy. It's
but
not,
you can still criticize them for not being accepting of gay marriage.
It's a moral change. That's just a definitional change in the basis of what they believe in.
I mean, right.
We're just in a separate group now, and so we're intolerant of that behavior because we don't think it fits within
We're intolerant of their intolerance.
So where I come down, you know, to come back to me, is I will fight against them when they try to impose that on me, or where they try to influence the California legislature. That's where I'll make fun of them. But I think that if they want to ban gay marriage, go ahead. They're a private institution.
Good luck.
But I might be against them on their tax exempt status. So I'm just pointing out these areas where I define this tolerance.
Promise. They've got, remember, Washington bends to the green, so they've got the green.
Yep. All right. Well, I'm getting intolerant of this conversation.
I just had a deja vu. I swear we ended like this before.
Really? I was here.
Yeah. Well, no. Oh. But John said, I'm getting intolerant of this conversation.
You know, I'll end on a random fact. If you start having a lot of deja vus, that might be a sign that you've had a stroke. So everybody out there, all you hypochondriacs, when you start getting a lot of those, remember, you're probably having a stroke. All right. Well, as always, the discussion continues over at the website at mormonexpression.com. And you can mosey over to the VIP lounge to be involved in an ever increasing and
vibrant,
intolerant of discussion. What else? Just lots of stuff. And we're excited to be have a few more of these episodes locked and loaded and be back here like a worm in your ear. Tyson all the way from California and Zilpha all
Thank
the way
you.
From the other side of the house.
Thanks, John.
And the beautiful studio audience.
Peanut
Thanks
Gallery.
For coming out, guys. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
As a